Hello, and welcome to the Screamcast, a slasher podcast. I'm Dan.
And I'm Olga, and today we're discussing Season 1, Episode 5 of Scream Queens, entitled Pumpkin Patch.
Ooh.
That's right. Not spooky, Dan.
It's so spooky. There's pumpkins in a patch. The great pumpkin's coming.
That's just adorable. Yeah. This one was not adorable.
So, spoiler warning, talking about pumpkin patch, everything before pumpkin patch. Yeah. What did you think of Pumpkin Patch?
I thought that it was a bit boring, actually.
Interesting. That wouldn't have been the word that I would use, but interesting.
I don't know. I just kind of was like, oh, the characters are saying more of what they always say, but it had some real highlights.
Mm.
As usual. Yeah. I can never be purely negative about this show. This had some really great lines that were really funny, and we'll get to those.
Yeah.
I just thought that it repeated itself a lot.
Yeah.
And that got a little...
See,
yeah.
I feel like... I guess... I don't feel like I felt quite this way since the first half of the premiere. That I felt like I was, like, almost on drugs walking this show. Like, it's cutting from thing to thing so quickly. The characters are so not humans. Like, it's so much Chanel in this episode, being, like, super shrill, crazy Chanel.
Yeah.
And, like, I do like Emma Roberts' performance, but I feel like I'm, like, I have to put myself in a weird headspace and, like, just like the style of it, but there isn't a lot of, it's hard to grasp on the substance. It keeps cutting from, like, I feel like it cuts, it feels very rapid-fire to me, so that's why I thought it was interesting that you said it was boring, because in some ways, I feel like just, like, all these crazy... It's mostly because every line I'm like, I have to wrap my head around because it's so crazy. And
well, here's the thing. When you have a lot of rapid fire... Yeah. And I agree with you. There are a lot of really fast scenes.
Yeah.
So when you have a lot of rapid fire scenes, that becomes your status quo. And then you lose me. Like, yeah. Like, if there were longer scenes intermixed with shorter scenes, there was, like, one longer scene. But, but yeah, I need that diversity of length to keep my attention. Not to keep my attention. Well, I was pretty focused.
So
but,
no, there actually were a lot of long scenes. I mean, the pumpkin pack is a long scene. The basement scene is a long scene. The scene with Dean Monk is a long. So there's a lot of long scenes. I think it's more just that the characters are so. It's so much of heightened surrealism. There aren't. You know what? It used to. Some of the more successful episodes for me were mixing the heightened crazy scenes with some of the more down-to-earth scenes. Mm-hmm. And Grace hasn't really been fulfilling her role for me that well in recent memory.
Yeah.
And that, like, since her scenes are like, these big group scenes, and they have Denise in them, there's no real, like... there's no, like, taking a breath of fresh air, like, a breath of, like, calming down. It's very heightened. I feel, like, stressed almost.
Yeah.
Watching some of these scenes. And I'm not saying I didn't have fun or that the style isn't fun, and I love the maze scene, and I think that Denise has some great lines in this episode, but it's a tough show, and it's a very specific show, and I totally understand if anybody hated this show, I would not blame them.
Yeah, like, it's not for everybody. Yeah. I recommend it to friends who are like, should I watch it? I say yes, but by no means do I expect them all to like it.
Yeah.
But for this episode, yeah, I don't know. I think I'm overstating by saying, like, I was bored by it. It kept my attention.
Yeah.
I didn't zone out or anything.
It was just a little bit more of the same. Is that what you
I'm sure I'm repeating that, but it's just kind of reached a point and exactly Grace, nothing...
Yeah.
Very interesting. I would say that she had three of the same exact interactions.
Yeah.
In three scenes that focused on her in a row.
Yeah.
And that was like, all right.
And they're also just very atropic thing of, well, my dad's with a new person.
Blah. Yeah. Well, we'll get to. But it was just, can we move on from...
In some, I'm kind of, it's weird, as far as looking at Chanel, I am in a weird spot where... I've gotten more used to her, and so I have, in some ways, an affection for her more than I used to, but at the same time, the show definitely walks a fine line between being, you know, satire and supposed to being an annoying character to just a point where I'm annoyed watching her, like, when she's going off and yelling and being shrill over scene after scene after scene, sometimes it's just not enjoyable. And so, I mean, I think we can get into that with even the first scene.
Let's just dive in.
Yeah. All right. So we're actually going scene by scene. So people who wanted scene by scene, yay for you. Happy day.
Yeah, we're... It's like, all right, we do character by character. And people are like, aw, but what about this? And then we do, all right, never mind. We're going by storyline. People are like, okay. And we're like, never mind. We're going scene by scene. So there's no rhyme or reason. I think it's just, well, it was just... Well, I mean, to what you're going to get. It's mostly just that this episode didn't really lend itself to any other.
No, I think there actually is rhyme or reason, which is that we wanted to go by character, but the show has changed in enough of a way that it's not easy to do that.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. But I would say I'm not ready to count out that we'll never do that again.
Yeah.
I think... Because this episode was written and directed by...
Brad Fulchuk.
Yes. And I think this is the first time that he's directed it alone. Well,
I'm not sure if you're right about that.
Maybe not. But in any case, it all depends on the director and obviously the writer of how it's structured.
Yeah.
So...
Because, like, last week, like, I was, like, very excited about just continuing on with this by-plotline method.
Mm-hmm.
But... The way this was set up, it was really just like the Chanel plot line and the Zayday plot line. So you can't really, that's, you know, too broad a category. So we're only scene by scene, starting with they're planning the pumpkin pack. And, you know, Chanel's all excited. They're talking about her Sweet 16, I believe it was, where she got a mansion. They burned it down and then stripper firefighters put it out with
champagne.
Yeah.
How decadent.
I, like, sort of enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah, I did. Because, again, it was the top of the episode, and it was not old hat yet. But,
So we have this whole thing with the corn maze versus the shining maze.
No.
Both Olga and
the
I...
The corn maze wasn't the shining maze.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Versus, like,
which...
Olga and I have to admit that both of us have never actually seen all of... I've seen pieces of The Shining.
I know so much about it from just pop culture that now I'm like, well, maybe I should forget more about it before I see it so that...
I want to see it. I just haven't gotten around to it. I actually have the Blu-ray here, but I haven't gotten around to watching it yet. So then we have this whole music thing with the different Chanels being like, oh, you know, I got Maroon 5, I got the two Fergies by accident, and then the whole Led Zeppelin thing. And so this her yelling, Chanel yelling at Abigail Breslin, Chanel number 5, about Led Zeppelin, like, one of the members being dead, was, like, sort of funny, but it went on for so long, she's yelling so much, that I'm like, okay.
So, you already got annoyed by it.
Honestly,
in the first scene.
A little bit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. It took me a while.
But... Yeah. It was fine. I thought parts of that were funny, but it just went on a little. And then we go right into their costumes.
In the closet badge.
Yeah. Your favorite.
Not really, but it comes up a lot.
Yeah. So, what do you think of this whole The Widows of Presidents kind of idea?
It's so weird. I think it was just an excuse to have her
dress
as Jackie Kennedy.
Yeah.
Which was fine. It was funny, and it ties to what Chad said later that we'll get to, but...
I do want to say, in both these scenes, I really enjoy Earmuff's little moments.
Yes. Yes. Earmuff's, Chanel number 3, was really great.
Yeah.
In this episode.
Honestly, for me in this show, my standouts are Denise, Chad, and Earmuffs, which I don't feel like are necessarily... I mean, Denise is probably supposed to be, but, like, I don't think that they were necessarily originally set up as the big heavy hitters.
I don't think so.
Yeah. And I really like Earmuffs' delivery. I like her wanting to be Nancy Reagan and not wanting to be the homely one, and...
The big important thing here
is
that Chanel chooses Abigail Breslin to be Mary Todd Lincoln for obvious reasons, which is that she says that Chanel number 5 is crazy and will end up staring at a wall nursing a paint can. What was it?
Like, I don't even remember her saying
something like that. Like, something insulting about her being in a loony bin.
Yeah. So I really liked this because... It almost went in the direction that was going to make me unhappy, and then they turned it around, which is they had, you know, Chanel number 5 being like, I'm not going to take this anymore, which I was like, you've already seen this, and, like, it doesn't make any sense, and then they call it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chanel says, like, I hear that a lot from you, and that's actually something that we talked about, where last week we were really confused by, like, why is number 5 supporting Chanel all of a sudden when she said that, I'm done with you, I'm going to go get Eiffel Tower now. And then
maybe you shouldn't be the president.
Yeah. So it was like, why do this 180 and now do another 180? And Chanel pointed that out too.
Yes, so that's good. It shows that this is a character flaw or just like a part of her character as opposed to a mistake of the writers.
Right. And which, again, I have a big thing about wanting to trust the writers. And them having this one line about that immediately builds up my trust in them. I can trust that. I feel like I can put my...
On the flip side, I'm going to point out, and this happens throughout the episode, but I'm actually just going to throw it all in this one discussion, which is Hester calls number five a bitch, which is the first of a few different things from this episode that completely go back on the whole feminist scene from last week's episode. The whole thing was at the end of that scene was they were reclaiming the word bitch, and now they're just using it the way anybody else would use it. And then throughout this episode, we have them back to fake eating and using the cotton balls, and nothing that we said from last week actually was character development. It wasn't her becoming empowered. It wasn't anything. It was honestly kind of a joke, and that's not great.
No, because we were worried about that.
Yeah.
We were worried, if this is an actual, it's a weird place to put, a public service announcement, so to speak, but okay. But then they didn't follow through on it.
Yeah.
I will be honest, I was more disappointed by the food stuff than I was by the bitch.
Yeah, I agree with you.
That was it saying bitch, because that, to me, was, kind of ingrained in them being catty.
Yeah.
And no, arguably, if they're,
if they had just said the bitch thing, I wouldn't have even brought it up. It was just in conjunction with this other stuff, and the fact that they, not only did they have, if they had even just had Emma Roberts' line about wanting to go get the cotton balls or whatever, that's one thing, but they made a whole big scene out of
it. We'll get to it,
Alright, getting back, so now we get to the theme song.
Oh, but the reason that you brought up bitch is Hester calls.
Hester calls Abigail Breslin.
And, get out, bitch. And then she gives, Hester gives Chanel number one, no one should ever talk to you like that. And I love the look on Emma Roberts' face, I don't know what to do with this. And then it gets to the title sequence, so as you were saying.
Yeah, theme song. So we've never seen in episode this theme song. Obviously, I've been using the theme song for the theme of this from the beginning. I had seen this online. They had a whole, it might have been, I can't remember if it was even longer, or if it might have been even longer, more extended than this when it came out online. If anybody knows, please tweet us at ScreamPod why we're seeing it for the first time now.
Yeah, I hadn't seen it online.
Yeah.
So this was my first time seeing it, and I really liked it, and it was long. And I kind of missed the days of long title sequences.
Oh, I love theme songs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is a theme. Well, it is. Yeah, I really liked it. It was really weird. It was really interesting who they decided to focus on and how.
Yeah.
Specifically, Pete with the wink at the end. That was oddly charming, as usual, in a weird spot. You actually had a good point where you think that it might have been cut for time.
Yeah, that was my thinking, is that maybe they had wanted to get this into every episode, but, when they're going through the editing process, they're like, well, we want to get this one little bit in, and, what an easy way to get a little bit of extra time is to cut to just the title sequence, and then maybe this week they were, a little bit better on time. They're like, yeah, we can actually keep the title sequence. So I wouldn't be surprised if, next week we went back to just seeing the title, and then another week we saw the full theme song. It's an interesting idea. I guess I don't hate it, but it's a little awkward.
I want them to keep it consistent now.
Yeah. I guess my feeling is that because I am a really big fan of opening title theme song sequences, and they've largely disappeared from network television because of time and the fact that we have more commercials now and that writers want to have as much time as possible. And so if this allows the show to have an opening title sequence but not always have to use it, I don't really hate that, as long as we have an opening title sequence once in a while. I guess it's a little weird and inconsistent, but I'd rather that than not have an opening title sequence at all.
Yeah.
But I really, really like opening title sequences.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Me too.
I think they really add to the feel of a show.
I agree, and I really like this one. Yeah. And I thought it was really interesting also the order that they showed people.
Yeah, that we have Emma Roberts and then Grace.
And then Leah Michelle.
Yeah, Leah Michelle's third, So, that's interesting. All right, so then we get into them canceling Halloween.
Or not them, specifically Dean Munch.
Yeah.
Closing the campus, sort of.
Well, it's confusing, because they say, are you closing the college? And she says yes, but then it seems like there's just a curfew. And then I'm not even clear, is the curfew just for Halloween, or is it from now on? It's a little unclear to me. I assume it's from now on, but...
And what made her change her mind? Zayday being kidnapped, or everything? Because she was so against...
Well, she had said, Wes say something like, I'm going to take it to the press, and then she's like, let's go talk about it with the adults over here, and then...
Yeah, and then she came up to him.
That was the beginning.
Oh, right.
So geez. We end that up last episode with them saying, let's go talk about this with adults, so maybe the idea is they came with a compromise, which is the curfew or something.
Oh, okay. I forgot about that. Let's go talk about this as adult because they never got back to it in that episode. But again, it's just also a weird, now we've decided. But believe me, I'm glad they did because it would have been ridiculous if they hadn't. I would have continued to be angry, and I actually like Dean Munch a lot more in this episode.
Yeah, me too. I think we both enjoyed Dean Munch more.
Oh, absolutely.
So we have both Earl Grey and Grace being sort of upset about Zayday being missing.
Pete wasn't in that scene. He wasn't
in the fraternity or sorority.
No, he wasn't in the frat or... Yeah.
I liked the little back and forth about Gone Girl to Bullocks to Gravity. Because I was saying Sandra Bullock, but that's the whole thing.
Yes. Well, that was the entire misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Courtesy of Roger and Dodger.
Yes. I didn't even realize it was them. They were the ones...
Wasn't it? I don't think it was Caulfield. Oh, yeah, Caulfield's back and homeless.
We have some tweets about that. We can talk about that later.
We'll talk.
I really enjoyed Chad's speech here. Chad didn't get a whole lot this episode, but he used his time wisely. And
emulating President Kennedy, our 60th president, apparently, who has some
Who, of course,
new
said,
quotes.
"Whatever. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself."
Of course, yeah. Yes. We know that, yeah.
So... This is also one of the only points in the episode that I feel like is more specifically satire in this episode, because they're talking about, how anything can be slutty, and how Halloween's great because it can be slutty, but I thought it was interesting, I don't even know exactly what they're going for here, but something that isn't usually talked about very much is that this kind of can apply to guys too, or certain guys.
Guys with rockin' bods.
Yeah. I thought that's interesting. It's not usually something you would hear. You would usually just hear about, oh, look how women are being objectified, which obviously is a problem too. But the fact that they're... Is the show saying it's okay because both guys and girls are doing it? I don't really know what the show is saying.
I think it's just it's talking about the standard for Halloween, for how things change. But that the guys are... Like, the role of women is to be objectified and let themselves be objectified by being in slutty, so to speak, costumes.
Yeah.
And the role of the guy is to be macho and show off. And machismo is its own problem.
I don't actually take it that way.
Interesting.
I take it more that it's saying that both guys and girls are making themselves slutty in this season is just saying, look how slutty everybody is, and look at this generation, how they make everything about being sexualized or whatever.
Being sexual.
As opposed to, I don't think it's saying the differences between men and women, because I think that they're saying that the women choose to do this and the guys choose to do this. And I'm not saying I agree with that.
No, but I would say the whole point is that it might not be... Like, I don't think he was phrasing it in a way where it sounds like a choice. It makes it sound like it's the standard, it's the expectation, it's like the societal
pressure.
But
I think he was saying for both sides. I point to
But what I'm saying is that each side has its own different pressure, and I don't think that for guys it's promiscuity.
Well, being shirtless is pretty much the same thing. It's still lack of clothing.
It is, but it's different.
How
a
so?
A woman's lack of clothing, like, all right, for example... you might see someone at the beach and you might see like a group of girls all wearing one pieces and then like a girl and a few girls in bikinis and then another girl in like a really tiny bikini.
Yeah.
And someone might say something like, oh, look at her. Like she's showing more skins. Like she has something, you know, she's showing off more. Like that's like a slutty bathing suit.
Yeah.
Which I have heard girls say about other girls. This isn't, like, this is actually kind of a true story.
Yeah.
But at the same time, then the expectation is for all the guys to be just, like, shirtless. Like, it's kind of weird if a guy isn't, like, just in his trunks. You know what I mean? Like, if he's wearing a t-shirt all the time.
Yeah.
So that's a different expectation of, like, confidence.
But I don't think that that's true of Halloween.
Of Halloween?
Yeah.
I think, like, it is more or less applicable. I don't know.
If you have any thoughts on this, I'd be interested to see what our listeners think. And again, I'm not saying that what I'm saying is what I believe in as much as I'm trying to piece out what they're saying.
Right, right. I don't believe that.
Yeah.
Oh, every girl should dress in a very
and costume. I don't think the number of guys that dress that way is equal to the number of girls that feel pressure. I don't think the pressure on guys is the same as the pressure on girls.
Okay.
Yeah, but I feel like the show might be implying that, but it's open enough, and Chad is enough of a douchebag that I don't know, you know.
And I do want to say, there are definitely, I agree there are costumes and pressures on guys to be, like, that are revealing and that are, like, unnecessarily sexual and focusing on sexual things. But I'm just saying, like, I think that when it's talking about, like, what the stem, like, the, where the pressure stems from is that the girls are there to, like, reach a pleasing standard of revealed, and for guys, it's about reaching a masculine standard of strength and, like, kind of, like, how men might be pressured to act confident, even if they're not.
That's I still think that's revealing, and that's that. I think the big difference is that, as a guy, I might feel uncomfortable with wearing that kind of outfit, but as a guy, it's totally fine that I choose not to.
Right.
Whereas as a girl, who might feel uncomfortable, might be looked down on or feel more pressure to cop to that. Whereas as a guy, it's, like, totally no big deal that I don't wear a revealing outfit.
Yeah.
And so...
Yeah. For girls, it's definitely, like, trying to find a not super tight or super revealing or unnecessarily sexualized costume is... like, pre-made or whatever, is really difficult.
No. So, Caulfield's alive, Chad, like, tests his boobs.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. When he's, like, he goes to Chanel and is, like, this is your fault. Like, I blame you for this after his speech unsuccessfully convinced Dean Munch, who was like, how did you get into this school? And he just winks at her. Loved it. and then, as a way of, like, well, continuing last week and getting back at Chanel, he's like, nice boobs, Hester.
Yeah.
And she squeezes them together. That was funny.
Yeah.
I like Liam Shaw.
All right, so then we have Chanel emailing everybody saying that she's going to start it on November 1st to have the pumpkin patch anyway, blah, 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 blah. Fine, you know.
She's not going to waste this opportunity to get back on top, maybe. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
So then we get to the scene. Hester is a switch hitter or a double agent, whatever you want to go with.
The scene takes place in the murder kitchen.
Yep.
With number 5 baking toenail cookies.
Yeah.
To get back at Chanel through the neighborhood children.
Or to not have the guts to go after Chanel, so they just go after the neighborhood children.
Of course.
And it's interesting because in some ways this week, like, really emphasized for me, honestly, more than any other episode, how rich Chanel is. And so in that way, I believed last week's Chanel-Oween thing a little bit more. But at the same time, I don't know that I believe that little kids are dressing like Chanel. That seems a bit much.
Yeah. That to me is like... because the whole point last week was, yes, she has a thing, but she overestimates...
How popular she is.
How much of an influence she actually has. And I thought that was really good satire.
Yeah.
And now this week to say, oh no, but actually though, little girls look up to her. And I'm like, why would they?
I mean, unless she's like actually a model or something. Unless she's in magazines or something.
Well, that's what she was saying later when she gets arrested. She's like, this will be on Gawker. And I'm like...
I don't even know what Gawker is, to be honest.
It's an online... I'm not going to explain. Okay. But I don't go on it. But basically, it's, you know, your tabloid, like, paparazzi stuff is on there too. And I don't see why she would be on there either. So I don't really understand... basically how...
her place in society.
Yeah, like, how famous is she? Popular?
Because when they introduced her in the pilot, I didn't feel like that was supposed to be part of who she was. Maybe I have to go back and look at that, but I just figured she was a big deal on this campus, not, like,
a celebrity. Right, I kind of prefer that. Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so Hester turns out to be a double agent and reveals this to Number Five.
Saying we should get back at Chanel. So then we get to this whole scene at Jennifer's room. She has this aunt family. I do not enjoy Jennifer, to be honest. I don't find this that funny. I don't find her candle thing is very one note.
That's what I'm saying. Like, okay, we get it. She likes candles a lot. Like,
yeah.
It's just more of the same.
Yeah,
it's
a lot of this episode is like watching cartoon characters do crazy things, and some of the crazy things are fun, but it's hard. I don't feel we're grounded at all anymore.
Yeah.
Things seem so off in lunacy. We're only in episode 5, and,
yeah, well, she's wearing an ant mask, and they come to her to get her vote.
Yeah, basically, to help her vote for Zayday. Though it's interesting, because I feel like she why wouldn't she have voted for Zayday to begin with? It seems strange. I do like, at least, that Jennifer seems intelligent here. She points out, like, why would Zayday make Hester her number two?
Exactly. That's
part of Hester's plan.
And they don't actually answer that, by the way.
It doesn't make any sense. I like the, there's a couple of nice little camera things here with the ants. I like that it's sort of, you have this close-up on her looking at the ants, and it changes the, racks the focus back and forth between Jennifer and the ant family. Then we have, you know, the crash zoomed onto all the candles that Chanel has been misusing.
No!
It's just...
100
candles. It's a little too zany for my taste.
I don't know what it... I mean, I like the fact that now... this gave an excuse for more of Lea Michele to have things to do, and, like, more of that plot line developing by getting Hester on board. Jennifer on board to make sure that happens. But we've been wondering, like, what are they doing with Jennifer? And then they gave her something to do, and then
I'm okay
with it. She's just not very interesting to me.
I much prefer the, like, weird, creepy version of Hester, like, as far as, like, the, like, being obsessed with death, more than just, like, the catty, manipulative, double agent version. I mean, they're kind of connected, I guess, but, like, just seeing her being, like, kind of a stereotypical mean girl plotline here is not that
That's true, but she is ambitious and clever, and she wants to be Dick Cheney.
So we get to this whole scene in the classroom where Chanel is using her Asian. How do you feel about this?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
I don't. It's a good, like, another way of showing how out of touch she is with what's acceptable. It's another thing of, like, elevating her character, as you said, to another cartoonish level.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna call my daddy and get you fired.
Yeah.
But I really hate that stereotype.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those... the whole thing is a fine line, because it's clearly making fun of racists who believe in the stereotype.
Right. Of course.
But it just seems like I don't know. It just doesn't seem new for the... I feel like I've already seen her have things like this. I don't need more. It didn't feel like a new joke. It felt like an old joke. And so she does get arrested here.
It does. I mean, the point is to once again remind us of how hateful she is.
Honestly,
or ignorant she is and ridiculous she is. And then she's taken down by being arrested. Yeah. So it's like, ha ha ha, you get what's coming to you.
I will say this episode, I feel like we had sort of slightly gone away from her, specifically her racism.
Yeah.
And then this episode had this and the black marble versus the white marble when voting for her as Zayday, and I was just like,
it made me roll my eyes because I didn't miss that. I was like, all right, you've established that she's ignorant, great, but I don't know if they need full jokes like this anymore. I don't know, that's my opinion. But I think that the purpose was to be like,
I also wasn't like massively offended or anything. It just didn't work for me. So then we get to the the basement and the pit, and Zayday's in this pit. We get these sort of interesting gliding point of view shots from the devil's point of view, sort of tilting and swaying back and forth from his point of view. I'm not sure if they're using like a glide cam or some other sort of rig or some sort of crazy dolly with a swivel thing or something. Mm-hmm. But so doing shots from the killer's point of view has been a big deal for a long time as far as like making you feel complicit with what's going on, especially in slashers where it's like you might be rooting for certain people to die and then it's putting you in their position and being like, oh, I'm kind of gross for wanting this person to die.
Oh, interesting.
And also for putting you, like making you realize your gaze and sort of making you uncomfortable with, like, especially a lot of times the killer is watching people have sex, and so you're in their headspace, and it's kind of makes you feel uncomfortable.
Oh.
It's an interesting technique. It's used a lot. Specifically, one of the things that jumps out to me is in the first Halloween movie, but it's definitely used in a lot of things, but not usually in quite as roller coaster-y a way.
Like, right, it's like, what's his head doing?
Yeah.
Like, swiveling wildly?
Yeah. It know. Almost reminds me on Lost, they would sometimes do point of view shots from the smoke monster, which was like a smoke monster.
Yeah. And I know the smoke monster.
Yeah. My point is like, that having point of view shots that went crazy all over the place kind of made sense because it was a smoke monster. This being the devil, I'm like, what are you?
This
is crazy.
Well, it shows us going through the Red Devil's point of view.
Yeah.
We see that Zayday's on a red couch or mattress thing.
Mm-hmm.
In a pit with a very, very, very long drop.
Yeah.
Also a very narrow drop.
Yeah.
How did they get the couch down there? Is there another entrance?
Maybe.
Probably, but...
Yeah.
That's probably...
The joke at the end of the episode where they're like, Earmuffs is like, did he build the pit? Like, where did he find this pit?
It's like, I don't think there are just a lot of houses built with this feature.
Yeah.
Again, really liked earmuffs in this episode.
Yeah.
Lots of great lines. Yeah. But then we see, from Zayday's point of view, that the Red Devil's holding a poodle?
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I didn't notice it was
like
a poodle
specifically. It was like some sort of white dog. I think yeah. I had a bow.
He has a dog. He holds the dog. She screams. He closes the hatch. Which we'll come back to this,
yeah.
I think.
We're going to be back in this house. In the cellar.
In the cellar. Whoa. All right, so then we already talked about them having this big invisible meal. I just don't find this funny.
No. I didn't understand why, like, Sam was playing along. I don't know if she was, but she was sitting there.
I think she was.
I don't know.
I mean, she's friends with earmuffs, so I guess...
She is. But it's just this thing of, like, why?
Yeah.
Why? What is this encouraging again? We've seen this. Like, I don't know why the cotton ball thing isn't enough. I don't know why they have to introduce another way.
Well, it just seems... When it was first happened, not in this episode, I guess you can be like, okay, they're going to such an extreme to make you realize, potentially as a young person, how ridiculous it is that you're not eating and that you shouldn't be like this.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're, you know, and that it is being satirical. I just don't think that after last week where they directly tackled this issue, there's any reason to bring it back.
Exactly.
And
to have more people convinced to do it.
And that it's a tired joke at this point, and...
Yeah, it's tired. It's lame.
Yeah. So but
Pete and Grace come in and they say, all right, Zayday's still missing. We have to go find her. And then the two characters that really speak up in this are Hester and Earmuffs.
Yeah. So Hester's kind of being like, she needs to pick herself up by her bootstraps. If she's, like, good enough, she should be able to handle on her own. She doesn't need our help.
I mean, and, like, that's presidential to take down, to escape a serial killer on your own. So, but then I'm confused because Hester wants to be the vice president.
Yeah, and what was it, Sam, that is like, that actually might make sense for
this?
Yeah,
that was funny. That was funny. Actually, in this sorority, I see that coming in handy.
I'm enjoying Sam, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish she had more.
Yeah, I agree.
We saw her later, and she didn't say anything, so that was a little annoying.
Yeah.
But Earmuffs, she comes up with a really good point, and it says, I'm number 3, I'm next in command after Chanel, who's in prison, and I'm not letting, you know, Dean Munch has declared a curfew, and I'm not risking the sorority, who's already in...
Jeopardy.
Like, in the red,
to
get into more trouble and to get us expelled.
She actually said on her poop list, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, she's just got these weird...
Yeah.
She says this weird stuff.
Yep.
And I like it. And it works for her. And it was cool seeing her have a backbone in this episode.
Shall we get into sexy time?
Yes.
With Wes and Gigi.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. They have some interesting sexual banter. It's just hard because I'm a man.
You are.
Yeah. I like how
I like
much
that you're a man. And when my wife died, your wife. Like, oh, no.
Oh, man.
Black Velvet's the most sensual song.
Okay, so the best thing is Grace coming in and Gigi saying, we were high-fiving.
Yeah. That, I'm going to be quoting that to people who don't know what I'm quoting. Like, people are going to be like, did you hear about so-and-so? And I'll be like, did they high-five?
Yeah, that was really funny. I really liked that. And the whole awkwardness of explaining the salad date again.
Yeah, also, Gigi's amazing. You said that you had your favorite characters that you feel intended to be people's favorites. Mm. I would put Gigi in my top three.
Yeah, Gigi's pretty great.
Yeah.
I really like Gigi. I think it's interesting that they keep bringing up this salad date thing. Because, so does that mean they've gone on, like, because they said it last, like, a couple episodes ago. Then they said it this for before the sex, and now they're saying it at the end of the episode. Are they only going on salad dates?
Yeah, but they've already, like, it's so weird, their level of, I mean, we'll get to it, but
yeah
I'm not sure. Yeah. I mean, it's been progressing nicely. Yeah.
So Grace is awkward. They're like, let's go find Zayday.
Pete is hilarious. Like, I'll just be in the other room. Pete? It's just this thing of, like, I'm not going to piss off your dad any more than I have to.
Pete's another character that I'm like, I really like this guy. I think the actor's great. Yes. Why is he not getting more?
I really want more of him.
Yeah,
I wanted more Pete and Grace alone.
Yeah.
I agree, Grace wasn't really developed. She didn't have that much to do in this episode. Yeah. She wasn't really that developed again.
Yeah, I'm still confused about how I'm supposed to feel about her protagonist-wise.
Yeah.
And
like, I don't know.
It also kind of just dropped why she was angry at him last week. And, like, I know that he was like, he's my best friend and that she would go to him anyway, but that doesn't mean you don't even mention any of the stuff from last week. Like, that was weird.
Yeah, she just refocused all of her anger to being about Gigi.
Yeah.
Not even anger, but, like, discomfort, I suppose.
So, then we have, I wrote Chanel is the New Black. We got this Orange is the New Black reference.
At least we think it's an Orange is the New Black.
The costuming is so specific, but it's also kind of what prisons are, but also, like, the way the other inmates were specifically dressed up.
Yeah, there was an inmate with a stronger jawline and the same hairstyle as Sophia, so
yeah.
I was like, is that supposed to be like Sophia? And then on the right, it looked kind of like Piper, maybe? Right?
Well, I thought that... No, I think that Emma...
Emma looked like Piper at first, but...
Yeah.
But the hairstyle of the one on the right... Mm. Also, it just kind of was like, okay.
I mean, I didn't mind. I thought it was kind of funny.
I didn't mind it. I was just like, is it?
And then that one of them, the one in the middle, had gotten a leg for Chanel-Oween and was a big fan. And
I
thought it was a kind of funny scene.
Instagram followers.
So I want to say, I like that this episode, you know, earmuffs, bails are out. I like that it's kind of, I feel like I understand the dynamic better now. Mm-hmm. That earmuffs seems to actually like Chanel and to actually be friends with her, whereas Abigail Breslin is more just, like, stuck in the situation she's unhappy with.
Yeah.
And I feel like it makes more sense.
I think, again, we should believe that number three has a backbone.
Yeah.
And she is not in charge, and she defers to Chanel, but, like you said, because she supports her presidency and everything and supports her more as a person. But I do think that she does have this strength and wit.
Yeah.
And intelligence that now I'm very happy that we're starting to see become part of her character.
Yeah, I agree. I liked, so both in this scene and an earlier scene with Grace and Pete, they used a lot of times in this episode these sort of low angle dolly shots pulling back as the characters walk straight at the camera for a long period of time and are sort of just talking forward and not even looking at each other as they talk and just walking intensely. They use it enough. It's like kind of a common thing to do, but they use it enough in this episode that I thought I'd point it out.
I like it. I love the style of this show and the various techniques they use and how it becomes interesting to watch even if I'm not as interested in a particular scene or character.
Yeah. All right. Then next I wrote, is it the best scene ever?
Oh.
With the so, Dean and Denise.
So good.
Makes me like the Dean more because
I like the Dean with, now. Yeah. Or I'm not getting ahead of myself. Yeah. I like the Dean in this episode.
Yeah.
She's talking about how other people judge, and we don't know who she's talking to. Yeah. She's just hanging out like, my other friends judge me. They say it's unethical, and I feel like I'm being poked in the abdomen, and it's over in 45 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I'm also just glad that they even brought back that
idea. Yeah, because they didn't mention it.
It's been so long, yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, she was standing right next to Chad earlier, and I think that's why he kind of winked at her. And then, whoosh, we see she's talking to Denise Hemphill.
Yeah.
And Denise has also done the deed with Chad Bradwell multiple times.
Oh, my God.
And
yes.
That she says it's some of the best nights of her life. Interesting.
All the role play, really funny. God. You
we
got
do
the right.
Intense, what was it? Intense research.
Yeah, extensive research.
Yeah. Lots of dialogue.
The best thing also being you got the right to remain sexy.
Yeah, I tied him up and I kept my uniform on. You have the. Dan had to pause it.
Yeah, oh my God, she died.
Well, clearly I didn't. Yes. I pulled a Boone.
No. She's dead.
I had to take off my glasses and, like, wipe my eyes. I was laughing hysterically.
Yeah. Great, really fun
you
scene.
You have the right to remain sexy. I might pull that one out, too, in unnecessary context.
Oh, man, so good. So then Grace and the bunk show up. The dean points out that she can't go to the police yet about Zayday because that's been 72 hours and she went missing. And so she hired Denise as the PI to go look for Zayday.
Pete and Grace, or was it Pete? Or someone
Pete
brings
was
up,
one of the people.
Pete was, they bring up the point of, like, Denise. Well, she already thinks that Zayday is guilty. That was another thing that got really, really old.
She said it too many times.
The fact that it's, like, again and again and again, we get it. You think she's guilty because of the chainsaw, blah, 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 blah. But, yes, they bring up the good point, like, because she thinks that Zayday is guilty, it gives her even more motivation to try and find
her.
Well,
also, to me, it's annoying because not only does Denise keep saying Zayday's the killer over and over and over again, but nobody else reacts to she has a chainsaw.
Right.
And so it's like, yes, Denise is being annoying and is probably wrong, but she has a point here. And so it's like nobody's even acknowledging it or being like, really? I didn't know that. Like, that's strange. So then Wes and Gigi reveal that they are dating. Monk is not happy about
She's
it.
She's like, oh, are you?
Yeah.
And then again, I was like, are we going to have another scene where I'm going to be like, ugh, the Dean? Yeah. But they didn't come back to
on
it
the
this
same time, the Dean. We've now had, what, like five scenes that have ended with the Dean looking angry because of them two being a thing.
About her wanting Wes and just, saying to Gigi she can't be with him. We'll see where this leads. I'm not sure it'll lead anywhere good.
Yeah. Then we have the Battle of the Jackies as Abigail Breslin versus Chanel because Hester and Jennifer told Chanel that Abigail was, so Chanel number five was all behind everything. And was the one
behind Chanel being arrested. Oh, and we never said why Chanel was arrested for the
killing
murder
Mrs.
of
Bean.
Miss Bean. Yeah. So they also... What was the other thing that Jennifer and...
Oh, the whole kidney thing.
Oh, right.
Like, she's that skinny because her parents took her kidneys.
Like Gary Coleman's.
Yeah.
And then number five is like, I don't even think that's what happened to Gary Coleman. Why would I say that? But whatever. And then Chanel pulls out a sharp thing, letter opener.
It looked...
A comb of some kind,
some
hairpin,
sort of,
whatever. And says she wants to stab her in the eye socket, but too much work needs to be done, or...
I don't know.
Pumpkin
patch.
Well, she sends her to the pumpkin patch.
Well, we kind of skipped ahead of the opening of that scene is, close-ups on Abigail Breslin putting on the Jackie costume.
Oh, right.
And we have these point of view shots that you're not supposed to be sure if it's the killer or whatever, and it ends up being from Chanel's point of view.
And the person putting on the gloves and the hat is actually number five, not Chanel.
So we get this whole thing about the way that she gets Chanel number five to endanger her life is to by saying that she has a camera in her room and knows that she masturbates to Dora the Explorer.
And she threatens to reveal this to number five's boyfriends.
Do you
Roger
think this is
Dodger.
Funny? It's okay if you think it's funny.
It was unexpected. I'll tell you that.
Yeah,
I didn't laugh at it, but I was like, well.
To me, it's an example of something that that Ryan Murphy does a lot, which is confuse something being crazy or outrageous with being funny.
Yeah.
And like, it's weird. Yeah, yes, it's weird. Strange, but it's like, I don't really think it's funny. It's just weird. Like,
I mean, I'm sure I'm okay with it being. Yeah. I'm sure people did laugh at it.
Yeah.
That think it was a funny joke. But for me, I was like, oh, that came out of left field. Yeah. I have no idea. Okay, let's go with that. Like, yeah. It was humorous, but I didn't really find it funny for myself.
Yeah. All right. So then we have this whole planning scene. It's constantly rotating
back
around
to Grace and the gang.
Yeah. Well, it's rotating around everybody. You know, Denise and Grace, and it's also. Keeps cutting it and turning the opposite way as it goes around.
I really like that. It was cool.
Interesting.
Slightly nauseating.
Yeah, I can see that, yeah. Gigi is talking about this clay. You want to talk about this clay thing?
Yeah, so basically, like, how are we going to find Zayday? And then Gigi reveals, like, the house on Shady Lane. She starts talking about glaciers and how different soil.
I didn't even understand
it. Glaciers, and then
there would be a red spot.
The house on Shady Lane is built on top of clay, and it has poor drainage, and there was a scuffle, so Zayday put in a car means that the car would have red clay in it, so the killer would obviously want to get rid of that, so we should check all car washes.
So
it was a very long line of reasoning.
My question here is, so knowing what we know by the end of this episode, that Gigi's involved, is her saying this to throw them off? Or is she actually trying to help them find it because she wants them to get there?
I think that she, on purpose, has it set up that whatever car that the killer ended up using, probably stolen or whatever, or does lead back to this house, doesn't matter. It would get them to the house. It would get them to rescuing Zayday eventually.
Yeah.
But it was supposed to delay them.
Maybe
they wouldn't have to actually release Zayday. But I don't know what she wants to do with Zayday.
Well, it's also interesting, like, I don't really get what the killer's plan is in that basement when they get to the basement, because he sort of seems like he's going after Denise. Why would he specifically go after Denise? That's interesting.
I don't know if he was going... Oh, right, no, he was kind of...
because he's, like, looking at Gigi, and then he turns and goes after Denise.
Right.
And, like...
whole thing of that was, like, she's trying to draw out the process.
Yeah, I can see that,
for whatever end goal, but...
Instead, they just use a friendly app called Find My Device, and there's this whole scene, they flash back to Zayday saying she loves Oakland Nachos, she loves them so much, she's them for all of her passwords.
Yeah, so, at first I was gonna point out, like, that's ridiculous, like, people don't tell each other their passwords, but then I remembered that I know my roommate's computer password, and she knows my computer password, because we've used them to, like, hey, can you log in and actually email me something from my, like, it's, so I was like, oh, wait, no, roommates might, if they're best friends, as it's implied that Zayday and Grace are.
Yeah.
Even though they let each other make stupid decisions, they don't actually spend much time together.
Yeah, they really, like, we're just, like, supposed to accept it because they had one scene in the pilot where they hung out, and then, like, one scene in episode 3 where they hung out and tased someone. Like, they really haven't been together that much.
And then investigating, they have, but...
But alone time-wise.
But not, like, hey, look at what we have in common. Yeah. At least with Pete and Grace, they were like, I can't believe you love How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, whatever. Matthew McConaughey. Yeah. But they don't have that too much with Grace and Zayday yet.
They're just both nice. Unlike everybody else on the show. Like, they have a little bit of a talk between Grace and Wes. Again, it's just like, yeah, I understand you have needs.
But then she's like, but you had to choose someone who I know and who is deranged.
Yeah.
Or, like, unstable or something like that. And Gigi's like, I can hear you.
Yeah.
And right before we think there's going to be more of this drama, Denise walks in and says, like, this isn't daytime television.
Yeah.
We got stuff to do.
I do want to throw out that the fact that we now know Gigi's involved and that she's going after Wes does make me think that Grace is
going
more important.
Romantically.
Yeah, the fact that she's pursuing Wes romantically does make me think that Grace might be more important and not just a total sideline.
There's a reason she's number 2 built.
Yeah.
I have yet to fully
understand
that or see that beyond, like, she's the one in driving investigations for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So hopefully she will actually have stakes in this.
So we get to this big pumpkin pack scene, which is, you know, the funnest scene, I would say, of the episode. We get Roger and Dodger helping Abigail out, and the devil shows up with the shears.
Of course, which they all saw coming, which I was like, all right. At least you know that it's, like, it was, again, it was kind of meta.
It is interesting, though. I am always, again, I mentioned this a little last week as far as with the Mandy scene, that it's surprising to me when scenes just kind of just play out as just what you'd expect from a horror scene in this show. Which, I mean, as far as the set design was, like out of control in this episode, like, it was great. But what actually happened, it's just weird to me when things aren't surrealist, especially, like, we just have this shot where, like, it turns and he's revealed behind her, exactly as you expect him to be revealed behind her. And it's just strange when things like that happen, in my opinion, because it's so stylized. And even, I mean, this scene is very stylized, but, the way it plays out, like, we don't even see him really kill, Dodger, and, it's just interesting.
Can we talk about how it's supposed to be, like, this is a pumpkin patch? Like, that wasn't a pumpkin patch.
Yeah, it was a...
Like pumpkin a, pedestal.
Yeah, it was like a...
pea vodka Red Bull from the cherubs.
It was like a ritualistic, like, shrine to this...
And where would the performers be?
It's a good question.
Are they supposed to be in the maze?
In the middle, maybe.
All three of them? Or four?
I don't know. Whatever. They wanted a time.
It was odd.
Yeah. Adam Levine's not going to be happy he got canceled on.
Well, he's been killed in American Horror Story.
Has he?
So, yeah.
I didn't know that. That's season great. Two. Oh, that's really funny.
You should watch.
I should. So.
Spoilers. Sorry. We warned you at the top. There are spoilers in this. Never said for what.
What did you think of this whole back and forth between Roger and Dodger making Chanel number 5 choose her side of the Eiffel Tower? In the middle of this.
I think it was just supposed to be funny and to have someone die.
Yeah, I mean...
And it's a good reason for them to split up and for one of them to die.
It didn't really work for me that well. I don't know if it was... We talked about how wooden the actors were, which I think was purposeful, honestly. You don't think it was purposeful?
Caulfield isn't wooden.
But I think the whole thing was that they were supposed to be just strange and like...
I suppose.
Like, I think they were supposed to be just like... Like, especially when they have those lines where, like, one of them calls the other one and the other one's alone and he's like, you know, don't step in your footstep. Like, they're just, like, simpletons or something.
Yeah, I mean, they're, like, definitely stupid.
Yeah.
It was fine. It was funny. I thought it was funny.
It was okay.
A weird timing. I agree with that.
It just felt so... There are just points where things just seem too surrealist and it just seems definitely. Like I'm just, like... Yeah, what am I watching?
It's another bunch moment, of like, really?
Yeah. A bunch of cartoony buffoons being buffoony. Yeah. It's like, why do I care that they're dying?
Yeah. I would agree with
that. Like, honestly, like, the only thing that really brings me into the scene is just how beautiful the cinematography is.
Yeah.
And that we have these sort of camera swaying as they're running and tripping. Mm-hmm. I saw Abigail Breslin tweet that, like, every time they tripped, it was actually them tripping. Because it was so slippery there.
Yeah, it's like real fake snow.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was like, walk backwards in your footsteps, and then he walks backwards into Red Devil's sights. Does.
I did like that Abigail was smart enough to say that, I hope I'm not confusing people by calling her Abigail, but...
Yeah, we go back and forth between calling the Chanels by their numbers, and then by the actress, or
well,
by
just
their
I don't want to call them 3 and 5,
I mean, I do sometimes.
Yeah, but...
Whatever. Anyway, so, Roger and... Number 5, make it out, and Dodger dies, and we see him with his guts spilled out from
the
shears.
So this is another time to check in on how much do we care that nobody important is dying. It's episode 5 now, and nobody's really died. It's becoming a... I mean, at least he was a named character who'd been set up a couple episodes ago, but, like, I don't...
Another Dickey scholar.
Yeah.
Not a sister.
And not even... That means that, like, only Coney died in that previous episode, because Caulfield didn't even die. And it's just...
Which I saw coming.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not that surprised that Caulfield... Especially based on
last week, I figured he wasn't dead. After episode 3, I was like, he's dead. But last week, they were, like, not talking about how he died, so... quick recovery, Caulfield.
I just... I don't know. It's becoming I want people to be getting killed off. It's time to do it. Like, if they don't do it next week, I'll be upset.
Especially, I mean, in the promo, they say it's our deadliest episode yet.
Yeah.
For me, it has to be both volume.
No.
And importance.
Yeah. Because, especially, like, an episode like this week, where you kill off someone who doesn't matter, and you do it kind of off screen, like, your trajectory should be going upward, not starting with this pilot that has three massive, crazy serialist deaths, and then kind of petering downward with mm-hmm. time. Like, it seems strange to me.
Well, let's move back over to the cellar, because that's the end of the scene.
Yeah.
And we see the lady who owns the house, who can't act for for her life.
It's okay. She's a nice old lady.
She is a nice old lady. Who rents to a guy who pays in cash.
Also, was this, like, basement not... I was confused. Was this a basement, like, separate from the house? Or was it... Like, were they in a room in that scene? It didn't seem like they were in a room. It seemed like they were outside.
It felt like it was just a cellar. Like,
okay, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I have to look back at that. But
I don't know.
The whole thing here, which we'll get back to from our tweets, is they get all the spy devices out, but they don't have any flashlights. So we'll come back to that. They split up.
So Denise goes with Gigi, Pete, Grace, and Wes go together. Yep. Wes, and Grace, they go over to the place where we saw before, as the Red Devil saw it, where there's, like, spare costumes and masks.
Yeah,
and
I want to point out that one of the mannequins seems like a female mannequin, so do we have a female devil going around in a costume?
Right.
That's interesting.
That's also weird, because there's no, like, the Red Devil costume is just, like, plate and
abs. Could it be like the under part is like more feminine and then it covers it with that?
Can't you wear whatever you want underneath that?
Yeah, like, I don't know.
Can't you just wear your own?
I was confused by that. I don't know if it maybe just a red herring.
I think it was just
something.
Supposed to be like mannequin.
Yeah.
And a mannequin that's more feminine figure is like that. Like a sewing mannequin is more recognizable.
Mm. This whole scene is very Silence of the Lambs. You got this pit, you got the night vision goggles, you got someone lowering things down to the people.
Mm-hmm.
Very Silence of the Lambs. So it's interesting, because when this show started, I wasn't expecting necessarily a lot of homages and things, but we had a big Shining thing and a big Silence of the Lambs thing in this episode.
You were surprised they wouldn't do homages?
Well, it just didn't seem like that in, like, the first couple episodes. It seemed like they were going so much, like, their own crazy thing. You know, it didn't seem like they were going to do kind of more like what Scream does, where it's very referential. I didn't think it was going to be as referential.
I mean,
it was going to be more
fresh. I
wouldn't
say it's as referential as Scream. Yeah. Definitely not. But it's up there. I mean, once you have Jamie Lee Curtis in it.
Yeah.
Who's the Scream Queen.
Yeah, yeah. That's a very good point.
You're gonna
yeah.
acknowledge the history of the genre.
Yeah.
So that they open the hatch. It's empty. Oh, we didn't mention that the dinner... There's a dinner table and it's...
It has the Oakland nachos.
Nice. Yeah, the Oakland nachos and, like, very nice and wine and... What's the story behind that? We find out later. Mm-hmm. But the hatch, they open it, it's empty. Mm-hmm. No Zayday.
So, Denise and Gigi find this, like, weapon chamber, the lights go out, and nobody uses their lights, and the night vision goggles, we get the killer's point of view again.
The killer is red, not in the green light, I mean, for obvious reasons.
And so, he's, like, going after Denise, and Denise ends up tasing Gigi in the boobs, and then Gigi tases the Red Devil.
In the neck, which I didn't see where...
So, interesting question. She couldn't see. Did Gigi mean to tase the Red Devil? Like, how would she know where he was coming from?
I mean, approximately.
Yeah. But, I mean, Denise clearly couldn't figure it out approximately. She shot in completely the opposite direction. So, I don't know.
I don't know. I'm willing to accept it for what it was. I don't think she... meant to, but I think she had to. Or, like, she knew she had to do it.
I think it was an accident.
Okay.
I think it's open to interpretation, but...
Yeah.
Tell
us what you think.
So, Denise, basically, after the devil is tased, goes and becomes a total fool and runs over and drinks some wine and totally takes way too long. And
yeah. That's another thing that makes me mad. Like, right as we think she's, like, mostly competent. She does something
really
like,
dumb.
Fully ridiculous.
Yeah. So Gigi's hit on the head. They have this whole stepdaughter moment where Grace
right.
and her bond.
That was so weird. She was like, yeah, okay, I'm happy for you. I'm happy for this. I'm glad it's Gigi. And she's like, it's like stepmother, stepdaughter. It's like, yo.
Yeah,
they,
what?
That's they weird. Are still on salad date.
I think you're ready for dinner if you're going to be
you're
a stepmom.
You're ready for, yeah. And Wes just is kind of like, oh, my dog, I'm so proud. Like, I'm so yes. happy he makes his face.
At least he's calling the cops.
Right? Yeah.
With the coordinates. Okay, that was interesting.
And Pete was also, like, looking for signal.
Yeah.
Yeah, not enough Pete in this episode.
Yeah, definitely not. All right, so then we get to the election scene.
Back at the Kappa House. Kappa,
yeah, so Chanel's trying to force an election before Zayday appears.
She pulls, number three earmuffs, pulls out their 100-year-old bylaws.
Yeah.
And they've been rewritten with marker, and she snaps them shut, which is yeah. another reason I'm like, yeah, she supports Chanel,
yeah.
because she
yeah.
wants her to be president. She's
good
gonna
point,
vote for
yeah.
her. She wants this to happen.
I like, Abigail Breslin being upset about dog year.
Yeah, she's like, I'm still traumatized, guys. Yeah. Can we not make jokes? It's like, nope.
So Zayday shows up, and she gives us this whole flashback backstory of the devil giving her treats, making it nice down there, bringing her up to have dinner with Ova Nachos, and being
and
in love
her
with her.
Roses.
Yeah.
And
then she's stabbing him and running away.
Yeah.
Do you buy this?
We know that she was in the pit.
Yes, but we also know he was upset in the pit, and that we didn't see him drop anything down there, we just saw him close the thing.
Well, here's the thing. I'm not so certain that the red devil we saw in the beginning
was the same,
is the
red,
same
devil.
Red devil who's in love with her.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this is an interesting thing, especially going into this next scene where we find out Gigi is involved, specifically. Because here's the thing, I had... Like, last week, I knew that she was involved with the backstory.
Right, because she
was
the hag of Shady
yeah.
Lane, potentially.
But I did not think that she was involved with the current issue, with the current
right?
scandal. I
yeah.
thought she had been crazy, had dealt with it, and she was going to be exposition to reveal the past.
Right.
I didn't
yeah.
see this coming. I mean, I kind of saw it coming in this episode when she got hit in the head. Like, that seemed ludicrous.
And
but,
and her very circuitous way of finding
yeah,
the
yeah.
house.
But though that I thought was just a connection back with the fact that he'd lived there when she was yet when you know as the what was the person of Shady Lane whatever
hag
yeah
well someone was it Denise who brought up she's like how do you know
yeah,
all this and
yeah.
she no one answers
yeah.
it. There's a lot of unanswered questions
yeah.
in this episode.
Well, that's the thing, I thought that was just calling back to the fact that she was the hag, not that she was currently involved.
Right.
But so but okay, but given that you're saying the whole thing about like which red devil was which red devil, and that we have now we know at least three people are involved in this, right?
Yes.
Unless she is a red devil, but I don't think, but she couldn't really have, I don't think he could have been, because there was the two red devils attacking during the Backstreet Boys scene,
yeah.
and she was off with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yeah.
It's also interesting to see that they had the red devils attack her.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah.
But my question now is, this is no longer really a whodunit TV show. This is more of a, like, Battlestar Galactica, like, who are the Cylons type of thing. It's like, everybody is involved. Which people are the ones that are involved? Like,
right.
It's not
who's
like...
Who's on whose side?
Like, it doesn't... It's interesting because it just doesn't seem, unless there really is, like, the one mastermind who you're waiting to see revealed,
mm-hmm.
sure. But at this point, so many people are involved that it really does seem more like, who, like, what is this cult, and
right.
what is it, why, what are they doing? And it's more about, like, what's going on
yeah.
than who done
I'm
it.
Okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, it makes it something different, makes it fresh.
Mm-hmm.
It does, like, in some way, it just kind of it kind of switches what you're... theories and your,
oh,
and your
yeah.
guesses are.
I don't think Wes
yeah.
is involved anymore.
Yeah. As far as, I mean, I guess what okay. I'm saying is, like, even what your theory, what theories are aimed at.
Right.
Because you're not, like, who is it? You're like,
yeah,
what is going
what
on?
What is going on?
Yeah.
That's the thing. So, for who this red devil is that's in love with, because I do stand by that one of them is Boone. I do
yeah.
believe that the one that Gigi was talking to is Boone.
I think so too.
And I might actually believe that Gigi's actually the one who went and freed him from the morgue.
Yeah, I could see that. Should also throw, we haven't thrown out yet that she says he needs to be dealt with.
Oh, yeah. So that's the entire thing. Yeah. Gigi tells the Red Devil he needs to be dealt with, and then that she's going to go off on a nice date with a man. A date with a nice man or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think that counts out that he is
the one that needs to be dealt with.
The one that needs to be dealt with.
Well, yeah. So the question is the one who needs to be dealt with just a random, like a side victim, or is it one of the other Red Devils needs to be dealt with?
Right. Because here's where we stand on who our male character, like our named male characters are.
Mm.
There's Wes, there's Pete, there's Chad, Caulfield.
It's not going to be Caulfield.
It's not Caulfield. I'm just listing them all. And Roger.
Yeah.
And Boone, and maybe. But, I think this is Boone. Yeah. So it's not going to be Roger or Caulfield for sure. So it leaves Wes, Pete, and Chad. Oh, I forgot one, because this is the one I actually think it might be. Is Earl Grey.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's read. I'm going to quickly read this tweet from Woosh Danny H. So he says, so Gigi wants the Red Devil to kill the guy Grace is with? Meaning Pete.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Devil in love with Zayday might be the brother from last week. So meaning Earl Grey. Basically, the point Woosh's points are: does Gigi want the Red Devil to go after Pete, and is Earl Grey the one that's in love? And so, I think Earl Grey could be... Earl Grey is the only character we've seen have any interest in Zayday in that potential way.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily want to jump to that because it seems too obvious.
It does. It really does.
I don't know. But we just don't have that many characters.
We don't have that many male characters.
Yeah. And so, it's like either... Like, in my opinion, the he kind of has to either be Chad, Earl Grey, or Pete. That's the only options.
Here's another thing. In the Backstreet Boys scene, the other Red Devil had... Who could have been? Because Earl Grey was actually one of the...
Oh, you're right. That's a very important point. Earl Grey... Well, it could have been... But yeah, Gigi was... Yeah, that's the thing. That's why I'm saying it's like the Cylons. At this point, I wouldn't be surprised if there were like six Red Devils. Yeah, it just...
Wow.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
It could be Pete.
It would have been too.
It could be Pete. And
but Pete was knocked out.
When?
In the premiere, by the Red Devil.
No, but that. Oh, yeah. I mean that could that. No, nobody was there to see it. So you're right that makes no sense.
Yeah. Why would they? Yeah. That's another reason where I'm like, well, Zayday definitely got out of this place somewhere because they showed us free of anybody else.
You're right. So that literally, there's no
Who
other.
Is it?
It has to be a female. A female. Yeah. It has to be another female.
Could
Red
it
Devil.
Be number five?
It could. I don't know that it would be number
five. No, it can't be number five because she was haunted.
I wouldn't be that surprised if it was Sam or Earmuffs or Zayday. I still think Zayday could be involved. I think Zayday's story could be totally BS. I don't trust Zayday's story.
Why would she be in the pit? Unless that's just where they sleep. No, because then she screamed.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is really... I'm interesting. Just,
yeah.
Interesting. Send
your thoughts in. I am officially confused. All right, should I read these other tweets we got, or do you want to read them?
Yeah, I can read the next tweet. Yeah. All right, yeah, so we're done with our recap.
Yeah.
Woo, first time going scene by scene. Whoosh. Anyway, this tweet is actually from Eliza L. McCullen. So, Caulfield lived, even with blood loss and no arms. WTF.
Yeah, I mean, it's not impossible. The cops would have to come very quickly.
Yeah.
And
they do.
Yeah, do they?
Seemingly. Well, we know Denise knows, and then she's like, you're getting the call, there was a thing.
It's possible. It's unlikely, but this is a crazy show.
It's a joke. Like, it's cartoony. I mean, Caulfield, hell, even if he lived, he shouldn't be back.
Yeah.
He should be in intense pain and in, like, PT for, like, a year and a half or whatever. Yeah. Like,
mm-hmm.
Not wearing a polo. All right. Do you want to read this one?
Yeah. So the same person goes on. They say, .. Who has a dog? #clues. We'd have no idea. Who would have a dog? I would say any of the Chanels I can picture having a dog.
But then we haven't seen the dog around the house.
Yeah.
Could it be Boone?
It could be Boone.
I still think it could be Boone. If you want to go for the gay stereotype of, like, gay man has poodle. I think it was a poodle. It looked like a white poodle.
But also, why does he have the dog at that moment while dressed up as the Red Devil? It seems... Because at first I was wondering, when they talked about her getting the treats all lowered down, I was like, oh, did he lower down a dog for her to play with? But then he saw him close the hatch.
Yeah, he didn't.
So it's weird. I don't know. I'm officially confused.
But if Zayday's story is true, that there is one of the Red Devils is in love with her, or in their mind, the Red Devils in love with her. Wait, now they know there are two, because there were two at the Backstreet Boy battle.
Oh, yeah, they know there are two.
They know there are two.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing.
Well, she knows one of them's in love with her, but there's no poodle in her story, so is it that that was a different one, or is it that that never happened?
Yeah, and I'm also at the point where I'm, like, I'm officially, like, I think the only people that I, like, I'm totally ruling out at this point are, as honestly, is Chanel. Aside from, like, and Wes.
And Grace.
I'm not even 100% ruling out Grace. I think it would be kind of a mistake to rule out Grace at this point. Because she's so minor, it's not like it's Emma and Scream, and it would be ridiculous. Grace has been, like, available to kill people.
But she's she discovers so much. We see her finding and being...
Gigi seemed nice and normal, really stupid. Too. Yeah, I don't know.
And really, and is doing this thing of, like, I'm gonna go investigate this.
I'm not saying I do think that Grace is involved. I'm just saying to just completely write her off as a possibility would probably be a mistake, given how minimal her character has been.
Interesting.
I think. I think that it's possible. And I think that, honestly, at this point, I'm also beginning to think that given how big the group is, that I wouldn't be that surprised if Dean Munch or Chad was involved, too. Because... If it was a who is it one person, I wouldn't have thought it was Chad.
Right.
But given that it's this many people... Except that Chad...
He was grossed out last week.
Yeah, and he didn't. And genuinely. He got attacked by the two Red Devils in the Backstreet Boy thing. But...
I don't.
But they didn't kill him. I don't know. It's confusing.
Wow. Again, keep giving us your theories, guys, because we are at a loss.
Yeah.
So, another tweet from Eliza L. McCullen. Why couldn't they use their cell phones as flashlights? !!
Because television.
Yes. Because of the Silence of the Lambs mod.
It's kind of lazy writing to not have found a way to get rid of their cell phones or anything. But
every cell phone comes with a flashlight. She also says, also Gigi ... surprise, sarcasm. I was a bit surprised in this context.
Yeah, here's the thing, as far as if you would ask, I wouldn't have seen it coming last week, because I really did think it was just a backstory thing. But I think they did a fine job, personally, because I think that there was enough suspicion on her after she, quote-unquote, hit her head.
Right.
That I was like, this seems very suspicious. But there was only a scene and a half later that it was revealed.
Oh,
so I don't think that there was, a long period of time where, it was so obvious that she was involved.
And I thought that who she was in terms of importance to the show, to this mystery, would have more to do with what we saw of her at the end of last week. So now it's two episodes in a row where we have a cliffhanger on Gigi and her suspicious behavior.
Yeah.
I want this to pay off, because we're only 5 episodes in out of maybe a 13 or 15 episode season.
Do we still not know how many episodes
of the season? I haven't looked into it since then. Oops. But even then, it's like, this is still a lot of episodes.
Yeah.
For us to have such confirmation in her.
That's because they're going to be like 8 people that are all Red Devils.
Maybe everyone's a Red Devil.
Everybody besides. Everybody besides Chanel is a Red Devil.
Sure. Let's do it. Cool.
Oh, man.
And none of the dead people are actually dead. I don't know.
All right. Thank you guys for listening. I haven't done the whole rigmarole of if you want to tweet us
rigmarole. I'm easily impressed.
Yes. If you want to tweet us, either you follow us, we tweet the episodes out, or if you just want to tweet us with your thoughts, you can do this so at @ScreamPod on Twitter. You can also send us an email, thescreamcast@gmail.com. We will read your email. It would be fantabulous if you tried to figure out all this craziness. And what else can they do? Check out our blog, thescreamcast.wordpress.com, which has the episodes. It has the Twitter right there. It has the contact us.
All the links.
All the stuff. And we have to thank an iTunes person.
Yeah, so we got a new review this week on iTunes from Lemon Pudding Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And we really appreciate you taking the time to write a very nice 5-star review. If you don't have time to write write something, you can still rate us.
Yes.
5 stars.
Yeah, thank you. That would be a swell of you. All right, thank you guys so much for listening. And remember, you have the right to remain sexy.
Bye, guys.